Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's favouritest, bestest, most greatest, and awesome, excellent Doom Patrol podcast.
Hail Hydra, Mike.
Idiot.
I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. You can send us emails at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We're on Facebook, and many of our episodes are on various platforms, so iTunes, Stitcher Radio, podbean.com.
Yes, you can also find on Twitter our Sentient Show Twitter account, Wilfred, who is at WFDpod. And we are also proudly brought to you this week by Comicosity.com, only one of the world's greatest, well, probably the greatest comic book related website out there. They've got news, reviews, previews, interviews, column views. They've got lots of cool stuff on there on Comicosity.com.
So, no abuse, sorry.
No abuse.
Yes, and I was looking at their Rebirth coverage. So they had an excellent review by Matthew Santori Griffith of Rebirth, which was very good. And they also had an analysis article, which was very interesting. So, you know, and that's one of the things I like about Comicosity. They focus on the comics. They don't do the movies. They don't do the video games. They just do the comics.
That's right.
So, and it's a pretty cool site. So you know, it's a site we believe in.
That's right. Comicosity.com. Check them out, gang.
So what are we doing this week, Mike?
This week we are back in the 80s with Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issues 15 and 16, which features the return of some classic Doom Patrol characters.
It sure does.
But anyway, how's your week been, Paul?
Oh, excellent, Mike. I've been reading Wonder Woman Earth 1, which I got from the library. And, yeah, that was an awesome comic. It's a beautiful art. And I think I would call that the best thing that Grant Morrison has written in many, many, many years.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's just very well done. And it's one of those stories you just read and you just enjoy. You don't have to think, I don't understand this.
Are you sure it was Grant Morrison that wrote it?
Yeah, but his take on Diana is fantastic. And the whole Amazon thing, it's kind of, the Amazon world is kind of sci-fi, and just the way that the women interact and the way they talk to each other and what they're all about is a really great tribute to the classic original version of Wonder Woman, I would say. And the art by Yannick Paquette is amazing. It is so beautifully drawn, and you know, just the way the women are depicted and the body types and everything is just fantastic. It's a beautiful, beautiful comic. I'm very seriously picking it up rather than just reading the library copy. So,
whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What about you, Mike? Did you read any comics?
I had not really, to be honest. I had a flick through my physical copy of DC Universe Rebirth number one. Because we read that digitally last week, so it was good to have that on my hands. But no, I've got a stack of comics waiting for me yet again. I've been nose deep in a novel for something different. A book with a bajillion times words more than there are pictures, which is a bit different.
Wow.
So yes, I've been reading Horns by Joe Hill.
All right.
Yes. Have you read that one?
I have not. I know, you know, I certainly like Joe Hill's comics, his Lock and Key stuff and all that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, I couldn't quite get into Lock and Key, and people still give me shit about that to this day.
Those people are very intelligent.
I better get the bleeper ready. But Horns is very interesting. It's quite entertaining and a bit dark, and it's basically this guy wakes up and he's grown horns on his head, and when he's near people, they start confessing their deepest, darkest, most disturbing secrets. He's been charged with a murder in the previous year, and certain secrets come to light about the actual murder. So it's very interesting. So
have you seen the Daniel Radcliffe movie?
No, I have not. No, I've been informed that the book is far better, which is often the case with these things. So I might check it out once I finish the book, just to see how they do.
Yeah.
That's pretty much most. I have been diving into a book that's also about the. It must have been the 70th anniversary of DC Comics. So the book's now like, 15, 20 something years out of date already. But reading up on like the history of the formation of DC Comics as well. So that was interesting. But yeah, no, not a lot of actual comic activity for me.
Right. Did they bring a whole lot of little companies together and form like a Voltron and make DC Comics?
Let's say yes, because that's an interesting mental image I now have.
Cool. Anyway, I think it might be time for that favourite segment of yours. What's it called, Mike?
Doom Clock.
No. The awkward one.
Oh, the awkward one. Going down on Darrington Way.
Yeah!
So what have you found when you've gone down on Darrington Way this week, Paul?
It's been pretty quiet, but Nick Darrington did tweet a picture of something he was drawing, and it looks like a gorilla looking in a mirror. Ooh. But the gorilla has Robot Man's face.
Ooh, what?
Yeah, so there's, you know, it's got like the Robot Man skull thing on top of a gorilla body with the wires going into the back of the gorilla's neck. This gorilla Cliff has his hands pressed up against the mirror in surprise and horror.
Well, I can understand that, yes.
That's, yeah.
Roll on September, I say. You know,
yeah. I mean, my wife relates because she gets to see my gorilla body all the time. But
too much info, man.
Is that the Doom Clock I hear now?
Yes, I can hear ticking. That can only be the Doom Clock. Okay, so looking at the face of the mighty Doom Clock. Surprise, surprise. The last book was still issue 22 of volume 5 from Keith Giffen and Matthew Clark. Covered dated July 2011, went on sale May 4th of that same year. It's been 5 years and 4 weeks since the last book we had.
Ooh.
But you know, it's only a few months till the new one in September, so...
What?
Yeah, this is true. This is true. But once we find out when that actual shipping date is, I think the Doom Clock will get a bit of a reboot. Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
Our last appearance of the team was 42 weeks ago in two different comics, All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. And this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale June 4th in 2003 for US $2.50, we had issue 21 of Doom Patrol Volume 3 from Arcudi and Enhuat. The issue was titled Salvation Through Terror, and this was the penultimate issue of this Doom Patrol run. And we saw Robot Man facing a patrol possessed by spirits of, you know, evil spirits, thanks to the machinations of the evil Tycho Brahe and Now Yut. And I can't wait till we get to that story, because I kind of forgot that that had happened near the end of that run.
That's a crazy run. There's some really good surprises in that run.
Yeah. So we'll get there. We'll get there. And that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I am still kind of a bad geek. Not a fan of anime, never seen any of the Harry Potter films, much less read the books. I ventured a little further into the worlds of Star Wars and Star Trek, and I've even managed to watch a little Doctor Who. I've also managed to not watch a single episode of The Walking Dead. So what do I like?
Comic books.
I have been reading and collecting comic books since 1987, and I've been a fan of superheroes for as long as I can remember. Some would consider this a hobby, but I prefer to look at it as what it truly is, a crippling addiction that I may never recover from. Back in 2007, I started a podcast called Views from the Long Box to deal with this borderline personality disorder. Every week or so, I pick a particular comic or issue or character or whatever to talk about them, and then... Well, I talk about them. It's kind of what a podcast is. Sometimes I'm alone. Sometimes I'm joined by my semi-regular co-host, the irredeemable Shag, or Thomas DJ, and the permanent semi-regular co-host, Andrew Leyland, and sometimes another friend from the podcasting and comic book world stops by to chat. The show is located at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, where you can find old episodes and show notes and links to my other internet endeavors. You can also find the show on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter under the handle @BaileysPodcasts. Views from the Long Box, a podcast about comic books or a desperate cry for help. You decide. Every Tuesday, or so, at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com.
It's time for the favorite segment of the show, unless it's not your favorite, which is Doomsplaining, which is the part of the show where we talk about some part of the Doom Patrol. And this week we are talking about the Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issues 15 and 16, which came out in the late 80s. So, Mike, why don't you take us through the details of Doom Patrol number 15?
Doom Patrol number 15. It was covered out of December 1988, but went on sale August 30, 88 for $1. Holy jeez.
$1?
I know, those were the days. God, I was, 13? Oh, those were the days. edited by Robert Greenberger, written by Paul Kupperberg, Eric J. Larson on pencils, Jim Sanders III did the inks, John E. Workman Jr. was a letterer, and Michelle Wolfman was the colorist. And on the cover, we see everyone's favorite shapeshifter. No, not Beast Boy, it's Animal Vegetable Mineral Man.
Yes!
It's been like decades since they've had him in the comic by this point.
Yeah.
So cool. So cool. So this issue is called Hail to the Chief. Spoiler right there on the title already. And we open the issue up and we see the Northdale Seniors Home, where one of its residents is receiving a report of some sort from a man named Walton. A report that confirms that someone is alive and well, and possibly a member of the president's inner circle in the White House. And the resident responds with, "The renewal of my dwindling immortality is at hand, as is my vengeance against a hated old foe. Niles Calder is mine." And you see this wrinkly old dude and you're thinking, I wonder who that could be. Meanwhile, at Doom Patrol headquarters in Kansas, the team is still recovering and in repair mode from their battle against Maddox. And we haven't talked about him since episode 27. When we did our episode about the annuals. So this follows on from annual number one.
Yeah. Maddox trashed the joint. That's what he did.
Yeah, that's right. He kicked their butts and trashed the joint. And as the repairs are going on, Cliff and Josh are wondering where Irani's gone and what she's doing. And they find that she's locked away in a room and Cliff's about to tear the door off to get her out of there. Suddenly she bursts through the door. She's got a trail of printouts in her hand, and she's exclaiming that she now has conclusive evidence that Niles Calder is alive. To which Cliff responds with, "Bullcrud, he's dead. I was there when it happened." He was. So, Irani states that only Niles could have created the security measures that tried to prevent her successful searches of government computers. She says searches, I think hacking is more like it. And she's now determined to go to Washington to find him. And there's a lovely panel there where Cliff and Josh just look at each other and they just both shrug. Like,
yeah, that sure. Panel stood out to me. It's a great one.
It's like, okay, she's you know, let's let her go on it again.
You could use that panel for all types of memes, I reckon.
I reckon so. I reckon it might happen after this episode. meanwhile, at Midway City Federal Corrections Facility, we see a group of seniors paying a visit to the inmates as part of an adopted grandfather program. So I'm guessing like Big Brother, but in reverse or something.
Old man.
Old man. One of these older gents introduces himself as Walter to one of the inmates who's playing table tennis. And the inmate is shocked when the old man says to him, "You're Sven Larsen, right? Because we're here to break you out of here." And all hell breaks loose as these elderly gents reveal high-tech firearms and they start attacking the guards and escorting Sven to the open yard, where a helicopter suddenly swoops down and whisks him away. And he turns and says to the old guy, "What about you?" And he says, "Don't worry about it." And it appears that when their mission is accomplished, they all suddenly collapse and die.
No.
Yeah, that's efficient in a way, I guess. We cut away to another scene and we see Niles Caller in an office. And he's freaking out a bit about the fact that Arani has, yes, uncovered his existence. And suddenly we see Valentina's energy form phasing through the wall. And Niles says to her, he's annoyed that she's not monitoring the patrol for him at the moment, which I have to pause here and say, what the?
Dun, dun, dun.
When I read this panel, I thought, I want to go back and reread the whole start of this series and see if there are any clues that we've missed about the fact that Niles has had a Val spying on the team for him.
I think I remember Val talking on radios and things like that to somebody.
Yeah. So,
and my conclusion was that she was working with Checkmate at the time. Because they sort of sent her to join with the team around issue 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, that was a bit of a shock, that one. And Val says she felt she had to warn Niles about Arani's discovery of him and let him know that she's on his way. And he says, I know. He's busy, you know, crapping himself. And back at DPHQ, we see an interesting page where Josh is having a sincere discussion with Scott about his leukemia, of all things. And while they thought it was his hot hands powers that had him in remission, his current white cell count tells a different story. And Josh is saying to Scott, I want you to stay out of active duty. And Scott's kind of not quite buying it. He's good old optimistic Scott is saying, I'll survive it. I'll beat it again. Just please don't tell the others on the team. And at this point, Arani interrupts them, ordering them to get into their outfits as the team's leaving for Washington in 10 minutes. And pretty much Scott just suits up straight away and joins the team on the mission, completely ignoring Josh's medical advice because, you know, Josh is only a doctor. But, you know, whatever. Once they arrive, Arani arranges accommodation at a hotel. And later she gets a quiet moment with Valentina. And she says to her, Valentina, we are in Washington. Now, where is Niles? And Val's trying to deny it, saying, I don't know where Niles is. But Arani calls her bluff. And she says that she's been monitoring Val's scrambled calls to Washington. And suddenly... I know! And suddenly we have both accusations and punches flying. Girl fight. The fight bursts through to the next room where the rest of the team are. And there's suddenly a knock at the door announcing the arrival of room service. And Rhea suddenly asks, hey, who ordered room service? And the door opens and we see an elderly gentleman wheel the cart in. And of course, it's a trap. The cart explodes in a cloud of gas. And another team of armed geriatrics storm into the room, attacking the patrol. So the team's under fire from all these high-tech weapons that the old guys are firing. But Arani manages to overheat the guns, causing them to explode and sending these two old geezers flying out through the external wall of the hotel.
They are not getting their deposit back.
No. So Josh flies out to save the old guys from falling to their death. But as he grabs them, he realizes that they're already dead. And he takes their bodies back into where the patrol are. And Arani has frozen the rest of the attackers with their ice powers. And suddenly there's a loud knocking at the door once again and everyone's tense. But it turns out it's just another guest at the hotel who starts complaining loudly about the noise that they're making. And then he gets a look at all the patrol, says, never mind, and he runs off. I'm like, what was that scene? But then suddenly, after that, comedic beat. A dinosaur-shaped head bursts up through the floor and it's Animal Vegetable Mineral Man coming to attack the team again.
What?
I know! Where did he come from? Cliff brings the newer team members up to speed on AVM Man as he attacks, and he suddenly grows giant wings and stirs up a wind that blows everyone out through the holes in the wall from the previous fight. And the fight continues to erupt out on the street. And AVM Man is getting the upper hand of the patrol. He starts monologuing, as every villain always does in this comic, stating that this has all been thoroughly planned out, first to destroy the team, and then Niles Caller. And Cliff starts to worry, oh God, I think I know, he realizes, hang on, old men with super high-powered technology, he's kind of figured out who's behind it all. And it's at this point we have more of the high-tech geriatrics arrive, this time with jetpacks, and they've kind of got a souped-up flying jet behind them. They start firing their weapons at the patrol, you know, blasting away, and one of them yells, "Get them! Secure the area for the Master's arrival!" And it's at this point that the flying ship touches down, and who steps out? General Immortus. And he's congratulating his men. Cliff, good old robot man, charges towards him, yelling, "I thought we left you for dead on the moon!" Which has to be a reference back to Showcase 95, which we covered way back in episode 11. And as Cliff's about to get up to General Immortus, he gets stopped by the gigantic fist of Animal Vegetable Mineral Man punching him into the ground. Literally, like, thunk. And as this craziness is happening, suddenly a car appears on the scene, sort of racing through the rubble. And as the smoke clears, we see that it is the chief, Niles Calder, there. And he cries out, "You've been trying to find me for years, you murderous old vulture. Well, here I am. Now let's talk turkey."
And the team, this is the first time they know he's alive.
Yes. It's like it's finally paid off for Arati. All her insane ramblings over these past 15 issues finally paid off.
Yeah.
What do you think of the issue, Paul?
There's so many highlights. I love that when they arrive in the hotel, there's an old geezer behind the counter who spots them and reports them to General Immortus. Mm-hmm. You know who he is?
No.
He's one of the old spies. That's the smell. The old spies?
Oh, God. Right. Well, anyway. Done. Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. And other things that stood out to me is when Scott is having the chat with Josh, we get like a Watchmen-style 9-panel grid, and we get 8 reaction shots from Scott, and they're very, very expressionistic. Anyway. Yes, so it's like the many moods of Scott in one page.
Yes.
I actually think Larson does a really good job on this that page and this issue in general. And this is Eric Larson's last issue.
Yeah.
He's off the book after this one.
Mm.
Gonski. He stays on for covers a little bit for the next one, but he's gone from this issue. What else stood out to me? Animal Vegetable Mineral Man, when he turns into some of these shapes. There's one page where he's like got gorilla arms and a giraffe neck with his regular face on top of the giraffe neck.
Yeah, that's a bit creepy looking.
I thought that was very interesting. And at the end, when the limo pulls up and Niles gets out,
mm-hmm.
and he does that dramatic speech. I just look at he's in his wheelchair with his blanket neatly tucked in over his legs. I reckon it would have taken him about 3 minutes or 4 minutes to get out of that limo. So I think there's like a couple of pages here that they cut out where they're all just looking at the car while he gets out.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
That's what I reckon.
You do see the limo driver sort of standing there.
Holding the door open.
Yeah. It would have been cool if it was like one of the souped up rocket type cars he had back in the 60s, and we saw like, you know, the roof open up and a ramp come out and then he raced out. But yeah, you're right. That would have taken a few minutes, a good few minutes.
If you've ever seen an old person get out of a car, even without a wheelchair, you know.
Yeah.
It's not super fast.
But yeah, lots going on in this. As morbid as it sounds, I did like the theme that they used of having General Immortus's goons be old men themselves. It's kind of like the old Batman villains, how, you know, the Riddler would have, you know, guys wearing similar costumes, or the Joker having clown henchmen, and Immortus has old dudes.
Yeah, and they have ridiculously large guns and jetpacks and things like that.
And ridiculously short lifespans. It's like they do their job and then... Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Anyway, Paul, take us... Oh, sorry. Have you got more?
Well, I just noticed the ad in this issue because you can vote on. It's talking about the Joker wants revenge and someone could die, which ties into a death in the family. Mm. So that places it in a time and space if you're wondering when this issue came out. Yes. Yeah, but let's move on.
Let's move on. Issue 16, please, Paul.
16 has a marvelous cover of General Mortis and the Doom Patrol is sort of small in front of him as he's sort of towering. And it's Eric Larson on the cover. But Art Adams does the pencil, the inking of the cover. Mm. So interesting. And he also did the one for the last one. So these two covers work pretty nicely. You've got AVM really large on one and then you've got General Mortis really large on the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is issue 16. It came out in September 27, 1988 was the exact date, but it's cover dated 1988. Look at that, it was. Yeah. Edited by Robert Greenberger. It's titled Reunion, and it is written by Paul Kupperberg, penciled by Graham Nolan. Welcome, Graham Nolan. He's the co-creator of Bane, if you didn't know.
Okay.
Yeah. Inked by Arne Starr. What a great name. Anyway, lettered by Johnny Workman Jr., and colorist was Juliana Ferrita. Anyway, let's get into it. So everybody is at the scene of so Niles is there and Animal Vegetable Mineral Man is going nuts. He wants to kill Niles Calder because of revenge for stealing his formulas and stuff. And Niles is saying, I knew it was you, General Immortus. And General Immortus is, I need you to get the secret of immortality for my survival. And the Doom Patrol is sprawled around. And General Immortus starts to go into a rant. And then he starts doing a maniacal laugh. And then he starts coughing and spitting. Hmm. Yes. But then he says, "We're gonna, you know, I have your team as hostages and I will kill them unless you do as I say." And then he starts bossing around Animal, Vegetable, Mineral Man, who keeps changing into different things. Like he's got a lizard head and a tree leg and, you know, an iron leg and then a crocodile and then a wing and all sorts of things appearing. He still maintains his basic human shape, but all the animal parts and vegetable parts and mineral parts keep swapping around. It's, yeah. And then Cliff comes too. I don't know how a robot gets knocked out, but he does. And he sees that Niles is alive and he is shocked. Stunned. Yeah. And yeah, they have a little conversation. And Niles refuses to help Immortus while the Doom Patrol are hostages. So Animal Venerable AVM Man stands. He slams Cliff down on the ground. And Cliff says, no, we've just got you back. We can't have you leave now. And Chief says, don't worry, Cliff. And then we get a very, very subtle panel of him winking.
There's nothing subtle about that.
There isn't. Don't worry. Wink.
It's almost a creepy wink.
Yes. So the baddies, they load Niles onto their plane and all their spacey looking plane. And then all the old men take off in their jetpacks and the rest of the team are left on the ground. And Cliff is so frustrated. He slams his fist into the ground and then this man appears and says, don't you think you guys have already done enough damage to the city? And he says, who? And it's Harry Stein from Checkmate. He used to be in the Vigilante comic. He's one of those characters that Paul Kupperberg likes to reuse in different comics. So this hints at Checkmate appearing in this comic. Anyway, we find that General Immortus has taken Niles back to his base, which is under the Northdale Senior's home in Baltimore, Maryland.
Of course it is.
The retirement home secret base. Very good. And, yeah, he's going to put Niles to work on his formula to give him ongoing immortality, not just temporary immortality. Does that make any sense? I don't think so. Anyway, Niles insists on being left alone in the room. They're barely acquiescing to whatever he wants at this point, aren't they?
Yeah.
But they do say that they have, you know, secret monitors on him. And then Niles says, oh, you will see everything all right, everything I wish you to see, that is. He says that to himself, not out loud, fortunately. Yeah. But then he says very softly into his beard, some sort of bug in his beard.
Yeah, I had to read ahead. I wasn't sure if it was a bug and the bug was saying, I'm inside, or whether it was like a spy microphone hidden in his beard.
Well, I was thinking Ray Palmer was hiding in his beard or something. But no, I assume it's a bug hidden in his beard because he says, "I'm inside." Mm. Yes. Then we find that the Doom Patrol have relocated to the Checkmate offices, which is in sort of an industrial park in a building called Conning Industries. Mm-hmm. And they want to have an explanation from Irani because Chief didn't said that she wasn't his wife in front of everybody. Which, for such an important moment, it really got glossed over in the earlier conversations, I thought.
Yeah.
Had to go back and spot that in the what they were saying at the start. Mm. And everyone's sort of turning on her because they think that she is a stretcher of the truth, as it were.
A bullshit artiste.
Yes, to put it in the vernacular. Mm. And she says, "Did it never occur to you that Niles lied to General Mortis in order to protect me?" And they all, no, it doesn't occur to them, and they don't believe that's the case. Yes. Anyway, Harry is like, "Come on, it's time to get on with things." And says, "You know, we're going to go on the mission. We've done some tracking, and we found that the dead geezers all came from this one retirement home, so that must be where they are. So let's all jump in our giant yellow truck."
I think you're paraphrasing there, but yeah.
He never says those words, so I'll give you that. This is what we're known for, paraphrasing and just making up what people say.
Yeah, well, maybe. Okay.
It's one of our things.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, we cut to Baltimore, Maryland, where an old geezer is on top of the roof and someone is creeping up behind him and steps on a aluminium can. Which no one recycled earlier.
No.
Anyway, and the guy turns around and says, "Who's there? Identify yourself." And he gets hit in the face with a stick that knocks him out. And we hear the monologue of the guy who's sneaking up, and we see that it is a knight, one of the Checkmate operatives, who have that super cool yellow and blue outfit with the horse head, you know, sort of knight as in a chess piece. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's a really cool design. I really like the Checkmate knights.
So if I may, with a question, there's like more than one knight in Checkmate?
Oh, yeah. They're like they're operatives. So there's...
Right. So it's like a rank.
Yeah. Think of it as a chessboard. There's more than one knight. Like there's pawns of the operatives behind the scenes who sort of like do the administrative stuff and, you know, man the vans and the mics and all that sort of stuff.
Okay.
The knights go into the field and do the missions.
I just wasn't sure if this character was known as like the knight or he was just saying, you know, yep, knights in the field. And when he's contacting Bishop Control, I wasn't sure if he was like the one and only
that's
known in the series.
Yeah, there's knights around the world.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you tell I've not read a lot of Checkmate?
I'm getting that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You can call him Fighty Knight if you like.
I like it. Fighty Knight. Okay.
Fighty Knight. Anyway, meanwhile, back in the yellow van, they're all getting briefed ready for the mission. They say everyone's in position and we're going to start knocking down the walls. And Scott's stoked by this. He goes, "Yeah." And have you noticed Irani's like sulking in all the pictures?
She is, yeah. She's, yeah.
She's stopped leading. She's just in the background.
Yep.
Anyway, then we see that Sven Larsson, the animal vegetable mineral man in man form at this point, is in his room in the retirement village. And he's really angry and he's talking to himself a lot. And he said, "I want revenge and I can't let this opportunity pass. And Calder's life belongs to me." And he starts smashing down doors and desks and storming off. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the knight is starting to infiltrate. So he sneaks in through a window where an old lady is sleeping. We see just outside the very subtle great big yellow truck has pulled up. Mm-hmm. When no one has noticed. Yeah. And Irani says that we should all separate into teams. And, you know, Cliff takes it down and says, "Hey, you're not giving the orders around here no more, Dig." Mm. We see that the knight has been knocking out old people as he goes and he gets to the control room when suddenly an alarm goes off and he goes, "What the?" And he looks and he sees on the monitor that Animal Vegetable Mineral Man has lost control and is smacking old people around on his quest to kill Niles. The knight, he looks through all the monitors and he finds where Niles is and then he pulls out his machine gun and trashes the entire system with his little Uzi.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit over the top, but sure, whatever.
Yeah. We see that General Mortis is upset about Sven Larson going on a rampage and ruining it. And then suddenly the Doom Patrol arrive with a great crash. They knock through the walls of the retirement village. Everyone's zooming around, flying, hot hands running in with hot hands. And then they start fighting old people. So Arani's freezing them. Scott looks like he's putting his hot hands on some old bloke's head.
Yep.
That can't be good. Lodestone is blowing things up. We see that Animal Veteran Mineral Man has made it to the room where Niles is, and he turns one fist into Diamond Fist and smashes through the wall. And there, Niles is there being very calm and says, no, it's not going to go the way you want. And then the knight appears behind Larson and puts his stick across the guy's neck to knock out Larson. But Larson turns his neck into wood. Didn't see that coming, did you, in the Friday night? No. And then he turns his arm into a tree, which knocks the knight unconscious. Then Niles pulls out a water pistol. Yeah. And he said, I had it hidden in my chair, because they probably didn't look under his blanket, because who wants to look under an old man's blanket? Anyway.
Not me.
Not me. Yes. And he sprays Larson, and Larson goes, ah! And the rest of the team run in, and there we see that... Animal Veteran Woman Man is now saying, that hurt. And he's turning into a sort of dinosaur with rock hands, and he's fighting the whole team, and Negative Woman zooms through him, and then he sort of collapses, and Niles explains that it was a chemical retardant, which is slowing down his mutations, but it's only slowed him down. Anyway, so, and then he turns into a, probably a rhinoceros that walks. On
yes,
two legs?
A walking rhinoceros of some sort.
Yeah, and he smashes the team out of the way, and then he's walking off, and he's turning into vegetation and diamonds, and he seems to have one hot hand, inspired by Scott, I guess. Mm. Yeah. And then he grabs Scott. Scott's trying to burn him, and he grabs and turns into a bear, gives him a great big bear hug with one green leg and one bird leg or something. Mm-hmm. And then Scott is getting squeezed. He's like, oh, I can't breathe. It's getting so hot. And he puts his hot hands out onto Sven. The Animal Veteran Mineral Man bursts into flame.
Ah.
Yeah, and the rest of the team stagger back. And Scott is shocked that he did that because he doesn't like to incinerate people. Mm. And Arani ices him down. So we see that Sven is there basically in what's left of his pants, which is enough to hide... his animal, vegetable, mineral junk. yeah.
Thank goodness. Yes.
Yes. And Josh is very concerned about Scott and says, are you all right, son? And, you know, Josh says, Scott says, I think so. And then the rest of the team are, you know, they're all going, yay. And Robot Man's giving Niles a hug. And Arani is doing that walk that you do when you've just left your outfit in a bin. Or quit being a hero.
Yeah, she's not looking too happy. Yeah.
Anyway, so then they said, but who's behind all this? And he said, Niles says, Larson is merely a pawn in this evil game. And then Negative Woman appears and she has caught General Immortus. And they see that the knight has now recovered from being knocked and he is okay. And then we see back at the Doom Patrol headquarters, Niles is getting a tour of the place and... he's hanging out with Josh, with Cliff and Larry, who are his old teammates from the good old days. Mm. And they're talking about how they all survived and how it wasn't really fair. And then they have a little bit of hold hand and they remember Rita.
Oh.
And we see a picture of Rita and she's doing a little bit of a pose as if Austin Powers was talking to her. And
dude, you're ruining the moment there. It's a really touching panel.
And it's the sort of where she's got one arm across her waist and one arm up behind her head. And it just says to me, look, I've shaved my armpit.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. That kind of spoils the mood of that final panel. But sure, whatever, Paul.
So what did you think of this, Mike?
I really like this. It was a nice wrap-up of the this story. I really, really liked the change in artist, I must say. As fun and as dynamic as Eric Larson's stuff was, seeing the characters in a bit more of a... being done with a bit more realism, I've really enjoyed that.
There's a little bit more Premiani-ness in it, isn't there?
Yes, Yes, nice new word there, Premiarniness. but yeah, like the panels where, you know, General Immortus is cackling over his evil plan, and then, you know, he has to cough and spit and, you know, take control of himself again, and the changes that AVM Man went through, and the wink that the Chief gives, you know, it's really nice artwork. It's a shame it's only for one issue, but I really enjoyed it. And yeah, it was just a really well-paced story. Like, I love how the Knight's infiltrating the seniors' home to find this secret base of the generals. And it's just by sheer luck that the alarm that goes off and, you know, causes the perfect distraction for him is AVM Man going apeshit and knocking out the guards to get to Niles as well. So,
yeah.
It was a lot of fun. And it was nice that they finally got the Chief back and they had what I thought was quite a nice little remembrance of, you know, the original team's days and how they lost Rita back then, you know, regardless of how well she shaved her armpit, Paul, you know. we all take different things from these stories, sure. But I really like that final panel there, you know, where the Chief feels terrible about what happened and how Rita paid the ultimate price. And Larry says, you know, how many times have you been there for us? We were a team, Niles. And Cliff says, more than that, Chief. We were friends now and forever, man. I just really like that final panel.
So, it's touching.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
more than just a shaved armpit.
Yeah. And interestingly, I think, you know, it does seem to tie up a lot of stuff, bringing the whole team together. Like, this could almost feel like the last Kupperberg issue.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. But they go on for two more, and they're fairly dramatic ones.
Just a bit, yes.
Yeah. So, the new incoming penciler, Graham Nolan, continues for the next two, I believe.
Oh, see, it's been that long since I've read them. I may have forgotten that.
Hmm.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Now I look forward to them even more now. So, yeah.
Excellent.
But yeah, it was a fun two-parter. It was lots of fun. And I love seeing Immortus and AVM Man back on the pages again after far too long. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Is that doomsplaining done, you reckon?
I reckon we are done with doomsplaining, yes.
The Fantastic Arts is your guide to the Fantastic Four from the beginning of the Marvel Age of Comics in 1961 onwards.
Each week, Steve Lacy and Andy Leyland cover every issue, spin-off, guest appearance and cameo, and more.
And in 2015, we begin our journey through the decade that Taste forgot, the 1970s.
Join us as we take a look at
the departure of Jack Kirby and Stan Lee,
the Kree-Skrull War,
the arrival of Marvel Team-Up,
Bill Murray as the Human Torch,
creators including Roy Thomas, George Perez, Marv Wolfman, Jerry Conway, Rich Buckler and John Byrne,
and of course, Marvel 2-in-1.
All this and more at ffcast.libsyn.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.
The Fantastic Cast.
Insert catchy tagline here. Wait, what?
All right, welcome back to the Mailbag of Doom. This week on the show, we asked everybody last time, what's your favorite novel related to comics? So this could be something that was written by somebody who works in comics, or somebody, it's a novel featuring characters that are in comics. Mm-hmm. So, and we heard from a whole bunch of people. So hang on a sec while I get my list ready. I'm so amateur. So Mike, how are you feeling?
Oh, I'm great. I'm awesome. I'm tired and exhausted, and yeah.
Good times. That's all right. This is fairly awkward, but I think I've smoothed it over so no one will notice.
Yep.
So how about that? All right. Yes. I'm ready. Okay. So first we heard from Jeffrey Brown, and he said The Hellbound Heart by Clive Barker, and the comics based on the first two Hellraiser films published during the late 80s, early 90s. Also the Nightbreed comic adaptations. Oh, and the Hellraiser Nightbreed crossover book of the early 90s. Yeah.
Sensing so, a theme. Yeah.
I've never read any Clive Barker. I've read comics by him, but not, yeah.
Yeah, I remember he did that, was it Razorline imprint that he had with Marvel?
Yeah, yeah, like Ecto Kid. And
yeah, yeah, and Saint Sinner and Hokum and Hex. That was one I really liked.
That's a good name.
Yeah, it is. We heard from James Kaplan, who said The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay.
Ah, the Michael Chabon novel, yes.
Okay.
Okay, we heard from Ryan Daly, and he said The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. And he said an anthology, The Further Adventures of Batman.
Okay. We heard from at Dr. Ange 70, so Dr. Ange, he's a man, and he said, there is only one answer, Miracle Monday by Elliot S. Magan, near perfect Superman, hashtag one answer.
And so, he's immediately proved wrong because someone else comes in with a different answer.
Yeah.
And that's Richie O'Hara Beamond, Rickety OB on the Twitter, and he said, one more vote for The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon, a wonderful book.
I might have to get around to reading that. I'd never heard of it until these people started mentioning it. I don't know.
I have. I read about 100 pages of it and then had to return it to the library and I never borrowed it again.
Right. That good, huh? Okay. Moby One, at Shmoby One on the Twitter, said, do novel adaptations count? If so, Michael Moorcock's Stormbringer, adapted by P. Craig Russell. So, I like a bit of P. Craig Russell stuff.
Yeah. So. Nice art, yes. Mm. We heard from Rift at Rift 1821, Rifty1, and he said, if Moby's count, then The Magician by Raymond Feist, fantastic novel made into mildly okay comic.
Well, that's honest. So.
Yeah, that's a good one for the trade, isn't it? Mm. Mildly okay.
We heard from at Taterpie, who this week on Twitter is known as Cap's High Drop Boyfriend. Ooh, controversial. Ooh. And they responded with A Once Crowded Sky by Tom King.
I've heard of it. This was the book that he wrote that led him getting into comics.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So I went and reserved that at the library after being reminded of it.
Mm. Yeah, so. I think it's about heroes have all vanished or something. From
yeah,
the
I think
world
it's about.
They were,
yeah,
they did exist. Yeah,
I think it's about 300 pages. Anyway, we heard some D Zavisa, Dougie, and he said, "No Man's Land." It introduced me to Rucker writers' prose. That's Greg Rucker, in a big way, big wonderful way.
Ooh,
not a Jared way, but anyway.
We heard from Martin Gray at Mark Gray. And he responded with Last Son of Krypton by Elliot S. Magan, a fantastic, smart, Bronze Age blockbuster.
Mm. Mm. Wow. And we heard from at Astrakas One, who's Newt Lake the victim here still. And he said, geez, Ryan Daly stole both of my picks. I've gone through two copies of Cavalier and Clay and must have read that Batman book 10 times in 1989.
Jeez. Really liked it, yeah. And we heard from Alan Middleton at Professor Alan, who said, hard to pick a fave, so just my most recent, Deadly Beloved, a Miss Tree novel by Max Allen Collins. And he gave us a link to a review on the site as well. So,
Yeah, good. Okay, so we got an answer on the Facebook, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah, and this is from Abel Padilla, and he said, everyone's going to say Michael Chabon's The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. You are so right, they all are. So I'm going to refer to an older novel called Count Geiger's Blues. Oh, Geiger Counter, yeah, that's clever, yes. By Michael Bishop. Here's the description from Amazon. Count Geiger's Blues follows the adventures of Xavier Thaxton, arts editor at a major southern daily called the Salonika Urbanite. Thaxton thinks himself a superior man. His aesthetic standards are so lofty that he regards superheroes as pop culture cock and bull, rock music as audible rubbish, and soap operas as the contemptible spew of script-writing committees. While skinny dipping in a pool polluted with radioactive waste, Thaxton is afflicted with superpowers all his own and becomes that which he most scorns. A radiation-induced ailment, the Philistine syndrome, forces him to assume the persona of comic book hero Count Geiger to allay its career, the indeed life-threatening symptoms. Michael Bishop's Count Geiger Blues, a novel of intellectual heft and self-spoofing kitsch, is a take on superheroes like no other, a rollicking foray into high and low culture that mines the vicissitudes. What the hell's vicissitude? And tragedies of everyday life for serious belly laughs and bona fide heartbreak. And then he adds, while I might prefer Cavalier and Clay, I remember enjoying Count Geiger Blues and would recommend it to anyone who is interested.
Thanks, thanks. Adol.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah. Cool.
Okay, Paul, what's your favorite comic-related novel?
Well, I'm going to cheat and give two answers because I'm going to play the host card. I very much like the books of Greg Rucka, and I got into them by reading Whiteout, which was his first comic work, and then I found that he had also written novels, so then I went back and discovered his novels. And he has many great novels, but I'll recommend his very recent ones, which is called Alpha, and Bravo was the second one. Alpha, Bravo, yeah? And
yes,
they,
thanks.
Yeah, just explaining it, because they sequentially go through the...
Yes, thank you, dear. Keep going.
Anyway, they're about a guy called Jad Bell who is a security guard at a amusement park. Let's call it based on something that rhymes. Let's call it something that rhymes with Disneyland,
mm-hmm.
something like that. And terrorists try to take over the park, and he's there with his daughter trying to save the park. And it's a really good book. And the second one, Bravo, is about him hunting terrorists. So
right. They
are really great books, and I highly recommend them.
Okay.
And the other book series I wanted to recommend, which people know, I'm surprised no one mentioned these, is Mike Carey, the guy who wrote the Lucifer comic.
Mm-hmm.
He went on to do some novels, and he created a character who's like an urban British magician.
Right.
So sounds a bit like a comic character, you might know. But this character is called Felix Caster, and he did a whole series of books, and I think the first one was called The Devil You Know, and very good stuff. Really enjoyed the Mike Carey novels. So look out for them if you haven't heard of them. They're good fun.
Okay, cool.
What about you, Mike?
I will admit I was stumped. I had nothing this week. I could not think of a single comic-related novel that I have come across or read ever.
But what about the one that you mentioned at the start of the show, Mike? What about that one?
Okay, that's... Yeah, all right. That's a very loose connection. I mean, yes, he writes comics.
It's related to comics. It fits in perfectly with the question parameters.
Okay, Horns by Joe Hill. Yes, that's my answer. I was thinking more like the guys are saying, the Batman novels that Rucka wrote, No Man's Land. I was trying to think of something along those lines that I may have read.
No, it could be related in any way.
Related in any way, you say. You're the world's worst ventriloquist. sure, that'll be my answer then. Horns by Joe Hill, because Joe Hill writes Lock and Key, which I wasn't a huge fan of, to be honest, but there you go.
It's still related. Anyway, okay. Does the devil show up at the end of Horns and say, do I make you horny?
Oh, God. I'll let you know. I'm only about halfway through, okay? But now I'm really excited to finish it so that I can tell you either yes or no that happens. Jesus.
Right.
God. Yes. Cool.
Sorry. Well, that's probably it for the mailbag at Doom, isn't it?
Yes. And the show, I dare say.
And the show. Anyway, so if you want to get in touch with us, we're on Twitter. You can contact Wilfred at WFDpod. Email, don't forget, waitingfordoom@gmail.com. We got no emails this week, which sucks. I think that's why Mike is so down at the moment.
Yeah, that's it. I haven't been dealing with arseholes all day at my own actual paying job and, I'm in desperate need of sleep. That's not it at all.
Well, you're the one who's a proctologist, not me.
It was the lack of emails that has broken my heart this week. That's exactly it, Paul. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. So, and don't forget about our Facebook page. Like, Abel hit the Facebook page. What happened to Shag this week and Fractures and all those people?
Oh, who knows? Disappointments, a lot of them, honestly.
Yeah. They should take a good, long, hard look at themselves in the room full of mirrors. Yeah. Anyway, Mike, what are we doing next week?
Next week, we're heading back to Morrison Case type shenanigans, and we're reading Volume 2, Issues 47 and 48.
Yeah. And our question of the week for next week is, what is the last comic character you went all in on, if you know what I mean?
No, I don't, which is why I want to ask. Clarify all in.
The one you got obsessed with and started buying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what was it for you, Purgatory or something like that? Anyway, let's get out of here. This isn't going to get any better, is it?
No, it's not. Thanks for listening again, guys. We'll catch you all again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Bye. Hail Hydra.